This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you. Good morning, world. I can't believe we're talking about the first football game in college on this day. Where did the summer go? Well, I know where much of mine went. It went back and forth to hospitals and everything to take care of a leg problem, but it just seems to have disappeared. And now we're into the season when we begin harvesting everything we planted this spring, despite some of the difficulties of getting it planted. Anyway, it's good to be with you on this Saturday morning following the Farm Progress Show. As I mentioned earlier to Matt, three great weather days, great crowds at Decatur, and again, great exhibits and displays at the 64th annual Farm Progress Show. We're going to share just a little bit of what Max Armstrong and I saw and did, and the people we talked to here between now and 6 o'clock, including a visit with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, who joined us on stage Wednesday, and we'll be hearing that visit between Max and me and the Secretary on the second half of the Saturday morning show. But other people to talk to as well, and we'll get to that when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. 12 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, if you're traveling by automobile anywhere for the Labor Day weekend, going to be a little more costly. Note this morning from AAA that retail gasoline prices on average rose to $2.59 a gallon this morning in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. So retail gasoline prices up about 2.8% from yesterday, up about 16.7% from the average price a year ago. And gasoline prices have risen more than 17.5 cents since August 23rd, before the storm began. Sorry to put a little damper, but I think maybe the weather will help bring many of you a good holiday weekend for the last big holiday weekend of the summer. Well, we talked to a lot of you at the Farm Progress Show and enjoyed all of the visits. Thank you to all of you who stopped by the ADM tent, and in my case, the University of Illinois tent, in Max's case, the Case IH display. Thank you for stopping by, saying hello, sharing with us some of your reminiscences of the Farm Progress Show's past. Always enjoy meeting the people on the other side of the microphone, so don't ever be afraid to come up and say hello. Ken Erickson is an economist, a market analyst, a market advisor with Informa Economics. And he appeared with us on stage at the Farm Progress Show tent to talk about crops and to talk about markets. And so the first question to Ken Erickson was his review of the crop conditions.
We're looking really good out in the fields out there, treated really good right now.
So as we look at what kind of activity farmers should be taking going into this harvest season, what are you telling your people?
We're telling people that we see some healthy crops out there. We did some pretty good treatment early on of the planting. The roots got down to some good water, and now they've been growing really good. We found some pockets of destruction, but we found swaths of opportunity out there from a yield potential. And I think what we saw in our surveys that we do and what USDA reported has been confirming some of that. And right now, the way that some of the systems have been setting up here, we've been seeing some decent crops and some good opportunities from a crop production side of things. It's just on the price side where we got some vulnerabilities as a producer, opportunities for the end user.
Do we still have a lot of old crop corn to move off the farm?
We do, and I tell you, we've been moving a fair amount for this time of year down the river, but we've not compared to last year. Last year we moved a boatload, But this year we're seeing still some good movements, but still a lot in the bin, still a lot to be moved, or it's just going to sit there until we get into the harvest here and just sort of keep holding it over into the next year here. But there's a lot still sitting out there.
Is that a good idea?
Well, if you got to cover your prices, and if you didn't do it previously, the idea may have gone past you several months ago.
Again, so many years we see hurricanes coming in to have an effect, and they can be a two-edged sword. They can have tragic effects for some growers, but quite often they bring, at the tail end of the growing season for the soybean crop, beneficial moisture. We are seeing that now in some spots, are we not?
We are, and with this kind of event that we saw, and certainly the high that we had positioned over the Four Corners and up into the plains, that certainly brought some good moisture. Now with Hurricane Harvey, that's trying to churn its way up to perhaps the Tennessee Valley, Ohio Valley, that will do some treatment on the beans, and beans like to grow, and they're going to keep growing until we get in there and get the last drop, it seems to be here, and we're going to see something. You know, there's a lot more potential on the upside probably on the beans than what we're seeing on the downside for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Weekly crop bulletins now 5 weeks in a row have shown us a higher rating on soybeans. Now, we know that's a different survey than what the NAS folks do for the crop report coming up, but is it your feeling that soybean yield certainly is going to be higher in September than it was in August?
It certainly looks that way in the sense of how this yield has matured over the years. The farmers adopting better technology, using that technology, getting the better equipment that we see on the grounds here. They've been using that, and we're seeing the fruits of their labor and taking advantage of the technology that's coming out of that seed. And so when you get some dryness, you get opportunity, and now you get the proper rains, even a little bit of rain. It goes a long way here.
Some of the best crops in this growing season have been in that eastern area of the United States. Not the big acreage crops, fields necessarily, but they're having some good yields. And yet, I'm reminded of the fact that CSX Railroad runs down from the eastern Corn Belt right down to the chickens and hogs of the southeast. Are there going to be some logistics problems?
You know, the CSX has had a lot of problems. They've got new leadership in there. The leadership has a different philosophy in the way that they run their railroads. And they're trying to do a little bit more streamlined operations in their mindset. They are promising that come harvest, they're going to be ready. They're getting prepared for the harvest, and they're going to be able to service that deficit area down in Georgia and into the chicken areas and the poultry and the hog areas too. They got a lot of work to do. They got to pick up some good metrics here real quick.
That's Ken Erickson. He's with Informa Economics, who joined us on stage at the Farm Progress Show. And he has a little bit more to add, and we'll get to that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We continue a little more of the conversation we had with Ken Erickson, Informa Economics. And so here again is Max with his question.
We were talking a little bit about transportation, and I know that's an area of responsibility for you at Informa, Ken. Looking at this mess from the hurricane and what it is doing, is there any substantial effect of disruption of exports taking place because of key port facilities that lie down in that region of Texas and Louisiana?
Yeah, in Texas, they handle all those elevators in Corpus Christi, Galveston, Houston, handle about 11 to 15% of our grain exports, and a much greater share of the wheat. So the greater impact is going to be on the wheat that we'd see in the short run. We've had a good run of wheat exports. In fact, last week, exports through the Gulf, through Texas Gulf, were really, really strong. We had really good car deliveries down there. The question is, did those cars get out before the storm came, or are they now fermenting underwater
down there? It could be damaged wheat then. It could be damaged and not exportable.
Yeah.
Now, will it support the basis elsewhere? I mean, do we have the wherewithal? That's asking a lot of our logistics system to be able to move that grain out another port facility.
It is, and right now we've got the flexibility in the Pacific Northwest to reverse equipment that way. Now, the flip side of this, some facilities in the Gulf and the PNW are under maintenance. They're getting ready for the fall harvest, and so they may not be in a position to see a lot of shift in the short run here, but we got to wait to see what happens with the navigation channels. We got to get clearance from the Coast Guard, Army Corps engineers, make sure the facilities, the owners cannot go into the facilities yet until they get the green light because they can't access them, and then to see how much damage there could be.
But as is the case with a hurricane damaging a crop and benefiting a crop elsewhere, sometimes these damages to export facilities, river facilities, can help growers elsewhere, can they not, by strengthening the basis to want to pull that grain away?
Certainly can, and we're going to see that basis probably come back and help them, although we'll get a little bit of short run, say stop sending grain until we see what the situation is. Basis will collapse and say, wait a moment. But as soon as we get some clarification, that basis want to go, and as long as the world market keeps wanting it, we're going to keep finding a way to do that. That will support the basis on the flip side of things here as we move forward. We just got to watch how sensitive it is. There's a lot of unknowns until the water finally gets cleared out and we can assess that damage in the Gulf.
And a big question is, have we solved much of the transportation challenge for ag products? I can remember shortage of cars and everything else over the decades. Are we moved out of that?
Well, last year we moved a record grain crop in October and November, and it's like no one noticed. We have far too many barges in the market today, and last year the railroads didn't have as much traffic on the network. This year is a little bit different story. We're not going to have record exports necessarily, but that's going to be the third highest on record, and we could see some problems if you start backing up the rail networks with the two biggest ones, BNSF, Union Pacific, that they start melting down from the Gulf. And I've got memories of 1997 when we had a meltdown starting in Houston, and we got to watch. I think today we got a lot more sophistication with communication, technology, but at the end of the day, there's only so many railroad cars, and there's only so much capacity on the system to move in the market. The river, though, right now we're setting up for a very beautiful fall. Should be very minimal navigation conditions unless we see the storm move over towards New Orleans and get more disruptive for the grain markets. But right now, we're setting up for a very, very special fall for the export movement.
Ken, we thank you very much. Ken Erickson, Informa Economics. 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the start of another beautiful day across the Midwest. Should be a good start to the first full day of the Labor Day weekend. Looking at travel and automobiles on the interstates and expressways yesterday afternoon, I think the gasoline price did not affect travel from a standpoint of less travel because, boy, there was a lot of traffic out there last night. Speaking of traffic, the car manufacturers announced their August sales yesterday. It always fascinates me to take a look at those sale numbers because I grew up when a pickup truck was seen in a rural village only and everybody else was driving two-door and four-door and coupes and everything else. But we have all fallen in love with the pickup truck. The top two selling vehicles in August in the United States, number one, Ford Series pickup, and that went up 15% over the July sales number. Number two most selling vehicle was the Chevy Silverado pickup, and it went up 3.9%. And then you have to drop down to number four, and it's another pickup, the Ram. Sales of that down 6.6%. In the month of August. Now, since the first of the year, biggest selling vehicle, Ford Series, F-Series pickup truck, and for the year, up a little more than 9%. Number two, Chevy Silverado, down 4.4% for the year, and number three, Ram pickup, and its sales up 4.6% for the year, so indeed, you're seeing a lot of pickup trucks in the city, in the suburbs, and yes, they're certainly still a very popular vehicle on the farm. Coming up on the second half of the show this morning, a visit with Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, and we'll get to that in a moment. But let me share this with you, too, because we've talked about it here on the Saturday morning show. The Great Lakes Basin Rail Line, well, this week, the Surface Transportation Board said no to the Great Lakes Basin Rail Line. Let me share with you, because in a few lines, he summed it up very well. The statement by Illinois Farm Bureau President Rich Giebert after the announcement was made. Quote, "We are extremely pleased to see the Surface Transportation Board today reject Great Lakes Basin Transportation's application to construct and operate a rail line through Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. despite evidence showing the rail line unnecessary. The proposed 261-mile project would have cut through prime Illinois farmland, disturbing nearly 5,000 acres for the rail line and another 14,700 acres for the rail port in Manteno, Illinois. We're happy to see the Surface Transportation Board concurred with our written objections when they found Great Lakes Basin Transportation's application to be incomplete and the company's assets insufficient to complete such a project. Finally, we would like to thank Senator Dick Durbin, Representatives Robin Kelly and Adam Kinzinger, and all of our state and local officials for their support in opposing this project. Those are the words of Rich Giebert, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, and I think finally a win for farmers and agriculture, because a lot of good quality farmland would have been covered over forever by that rail port and also by the track line necessary to construct that railroad around the Chicago area. You know, listening to those temperatures, Roger, we had temperatures like that during much of the month of August. Very unusual August weather, I think, for this part of the Midwest. And so anyway, some talk in Farm Progress Show country about cooler weather slowing down the maturity of the crop and making for a longer harvest. We knew it would be a longer harvest with all the rains that delayed much of the crop planting in the spring. Several farmers had to replant 2, 3, and I've talked to one who replanted 4 times, and that's an expensive proposition when you look at the price of seed today. We're back here on the Saturday morning show, and we say welcome to Samuelson Says. It's sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and some of your answers coming up to the question, what is a family farm?
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster, it does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink. WHINK Wink.com.
A week ago on Samuelson Says, you may recall I talked about the definition of a family farm, because that question was raised by a city person who had visited a dairy farm in Wisconsin this summer. And he said the farmer owner operators kept referring to their operation as a family farm, and he said, what is it? So I asked for your help in responding, and thank you for responding. You indeed did, and I was pleased to see that every answer to the question included the word family. Has to have the family involved in operation. Shortest response? My idea of a family farm is one that is owned and operated by the family with minimal outside help. But then I received one from a man who knows, Eldon Gould, who raises hogs and corn and soybeans west of Chicago, and who has served in the U.S. Department of Agriculture a couple of decades ago in charge of the Risk Management Agency. And Eldon said, in response to your question, I would say it's an agricultural entity managed by a family. It could be large, it could be small, crops or livestock. Often larger farms have hired help that do some or all of the work, but the family provides direction and management and, of course, has all the risk associated with any agricultural production. While in Washington, I also questioned why was $1,000 gross the number to qualify to be a farm. I was told it was because of the 18-19 colleges prevalent in southern states. As I understand, the 18-19 colleges is a group similar to land-grant colleges, and the number of 18 18-19 colleges determines the amount of federal funding available to a particular state, mostly southern. I was also told in so many words, don't even think about changing the $1,000 threshold as it is so entrenched in southern culture. One more time, follow the money. My thanks to Eldon Gould, and thanks to all of you who took the time to share with me your definition of a family farm. And besides the word family, they also talked about productive. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And coming up soon, right after we take a time out for some commercial activity, we're going to share with you our visit with Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Agriculture at the Farm Progress Show. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue continues to impress me with the work that he is doing as secretary. He's getting out into the country, talking to people who have to follow the rules of the Farm Bill and other legislation that comes out of Washington, D.C. But as I've said several times, and this is strictly a compliment, he's a down-home good old boy who talks the language of agriculture. He has been in the political world. He has been in the agricultural world, operating and owning agribusinesses, serving Georgia farmers. And I like him. I really do. And so he walked into the ADM tent, which was already packed with people, on Wednesday afternoon and came on stage where Max and I were working with our band. And when he got to the stage and pulled up, and after the applause ended, he sat down and talked with us. And so the first question came from Max.
Have you been getting an earful from farmers?
Well, I have, but it's always a good earful because it's authentic, and I identify with that. But I want to tell you guys what an honor it is to be with the Harry Carries of Farm Broadcasting here today.
Thank you for saying so. You were out certainly on your tour not many days ago, and you had to have a lot of concerns expressed. What would have been the top two? Trade has to be a big one, right?
Trade, and obviously still anxiety about NAFTA and about Korea free trade agreements. Obviously, trade is one of the utmost things. We're blessed in this nation, blessed in an industry where we can produce more than our country needs. We don't have to import those needs. So that's a blessing on one hand, but we have to get rid of it. And that's one of our goals. That's why we created the Undersecretary for Trade, that every day is going to get up thinking, where can I sell U.S. products today?
Can you give us any reassurance about NAFTA? I've talked to some folks this morning, quite nervous about it, Mr. Secretary.
I'd love to give you some assurance. We're just in the second round now. Hopefully we can get this over by December. Mexico certainly wants to get it done by December. I think everyone would like to get a deal. The president's very concerned about trade deficits, particularly in auto and auto manufacturing south. He fully understands the what we have on the line in agriculture. Early on, I was able to demonstrate that, what it meant to U.S. farmers. So he's very mindful of that, but it's a huge balance across the overall economy. I'm hoping we can get it done to the satisfaction of our ag industry.
How much, Mr. Secretary, are you hearing about crop insurance and its importance?
I think when the 2014 Farm Bill came in with the crop insurance program, everybody understood it would be a great safety net. And it's proven that to be. Now, you don't look any further than the sad situation in Texas and Louisiana right now to understand. Farmers in this area understand 2012 how important it was. So we need to maintain a good basis, a good crop insurance program going forward in the 18 Farm Bill. I think Congress understands that. And certainly Chairman Roberts and Chairman Conaway, the chairs of our agricultural committees, understand that. And I think you'll see there are a few changes that need to be made. We hope there'll be improvements and not impediments again, and make crop insurance an even more vital part of the farm safety net. I call it the food security safety net for America, because when you have devastation like we've had in Texas, you say, well, it's only a certain percentage of the crop. But for a farmer, it may be 100% of theirs, and they may not be able to farm again without crop insurance there. And I don't think Congress wants to get into the supplemental disaster program year after year. That's a painful decision for them to make. We think crop insurance, where producers participate in that, is the appropriate way to go. The public understands insurance as well.
I have really liked what you're doing with young people, FFA, and so what brings you to that part of the Secretary's job, making it easier for young people to get into farming?
Well, again, they're critical. When you look at the age of our demographics of our farmers today, we see an aging generation. Farming is a tough business, first of all. It's a high-risk business with a high barrier of entry. We've got to make it easier and more convenient for young people to get in it. It's not the lack of interest. It's not the lack of energy. It's not the lack of desire. We've got to help to alleviate and remove those barriers. USDA wants to be a part of that. But I've also encouraged young people interested in agriculture to aspire to your guys' jobs. We need good ag communicators for the future. We've lost the battle on some public sector battles about labeling and naming and those kind of things based on that great research and technology that we have in agriculture. We just haven't communicated it very well. We have not gotten out here and told the great story. So I need young people who also want to tell that great ag story for the future so people can understand how blessed we are in a nation to have the safest, most abundant, most nutritious food supply anywhere in the world.
It's a case where technology got here first, but communications was a little slow in explaining to the non-farm consumer.
That's exactly right. And I think with the new technology that we're seeing with the gene editing, not the transgenic type of genes, I'm hoping we can develop and communicate a better story to tell so the mothers and the fathers or those preparing food for their family will understand that this is a safe food that they can confidently put on their children's and their family's table and consume without any concern at all.
Mr. Secretary, we've watched what's been happening with the hurricane, of course. We've seen people driving cattle. I mean, the water's been up to the bellies of the steers, and they're out there doing what they can to save their animals. Your agency has had a pretty dramatic response, too, has it not, on a variety of fronts to the hurricane?
It has, and it will have even more. Obviously, the FEMA has the first responsibilities over human life and rescue, search and rescue, and we don't try to get in their way until the things recede. First of all, we couldn't do an adequate census or assessment of all the damages there. But USDA will come right in now. We already have people in the APHIS, Animal Plant Inspection Help Division. We've got food safety looking at processors there whose refrigerators, freezers may have been off. And there we've got our animal welfare people with APHIS there. So there are a number of places. Obviously, when people are able to get their FSA offices, we're going to have a lot of demand regarding claims at our FSA offices, our NRCS helping to rebuild some of these fields and farms there from a natural conservation standpoint. There's big challenges. Most of our work is ahead. We've been down there. Our people really came in ahead of time, prepared. The good news is virtually all of our people are accounted for, and that's a great thing. So they're willing to come in and to help. Just like all Americans. American, you look at this, this is when America's best at its best.
Did you have any idea when you took this job that you'd have to shoulder so much of it by yourself that you wouldn't have more team members in place by this date, people like Ted McKinney and others?
I had no idea that except Labor Day of the first year that I'd be the only Senate-confirmed person at the USDA. I think that's a tragedy, and I wish that we could proceed quicker. Particularly in these transition times, we've got a lot of mission areas, and I need help of leadership there. The good news about it is we have great career staff there that knows what they're doing. They're professionals, and they've carried on the work. But we still need in the transformation, in the reformation process, in the vision for leadership going forward, or how we're going to do better, faster, easier, quicker service for our customers. We need a team of leadership there. We've identified, you mentioned one, some great people there. You got Steve Sinski with American Soybean Association, nominated to be deputy. I need him, 2 months ago or 3 months ago. And we've got Ted McKinney as our undersecretary of trade. I want him out here on the Million Mile Club right away, knocking on doors all across this planet, determining where we can sell more U.S. ag products.
One final question. What is the biggest surprise that has come your way since becoming Secretary of Agriculture?
Final question. I'm having too much fun, Orrin. You're going to make me quit. Actually, I think a surprise has been in D.C., we've constructed a system of checks and balances that sort of slug the system from time to time. It develops into a mother may I environment. Being a former governor and executive leadership, I could make decisions and implement them and do that. We've got so many legal, regulatory checks and balances there that make it somewhat demoralizing to reform. You may remember the little dust-up we had about rural development. We would not have a rural development leader now if I'd waited for a Senate-confirmed leader. I've got Ann Hazlett in there, a Midwest girl from Indiana, that knows what she's doing. She's great in that space. She's already making transformative changes in rural development and helping to lead this interagency task force on rural prosperity. And so these kind of people are needed, but it's so much of a check and balance system there where you have to notify her, you have to work so many days to do this, you have to wait 180 days to do that. I was really stunned when they told me for rules and regulations over what we do, it'd be like 18 months. I said, I'm from the private sector. I'm a sooner rather than later guy. Let's get it done. We can't wait to harvest a crop in 18 months.
Indeed, we can't. Some of the comments of Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue at the ADM tent this past Wednesday in Decatur, Illinois. And it took him forever to get out of the tent because everybody wanted to say hello and offer their comments on the state of agriculture and the Farm Bill and NAFTA and a lot of other things. But we thoroughly enjoyed it, and he doesn't let grass grow under his feet because after that appearance, he did another RV tour, getting out to see America, traveled to the northeastern part of the country, and visited there with USDA offices and farmers and people who have an interest in the food industry in this country. And he finally did get one more person named because, as you heard, that's the frustration he has in getting things done. Can't do it quickly in Washington. But yesterday he administered the oath of office to Tony Took, who became the 18th chief of the U.S. Forest Service. The ceremony took place at White Mountain National Forest. Took has worked for the Forest Service since he was 18 years old, 37 total years of service now. Until yesterday, he was the regional forester for the southern region. And Secretary Perdue said he is a truly homegrown chief. Having worked his entire adult life for the Forest Service, he comes on board at a time of great opportunity to reform our approach to forest management. And one of the areas that he'll be working on, wildfires, have been aggressive this season, said the secretary, and it's frustrating to me to see that a greater and greater percentage, it's now at 55% of our budget in the Forest Service, is spent on fire suppression. Wildfires in the West and the Southeast, well, wherever. And so anyway, he does have now one more sworn-in assistant as the chief of the U.S. Forest Service. It's 5 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. Temperature down in the upper 40s and lower 50s, and it looks like a pretty nice Labor Day weekend. But make it a safe one because, again, those four-way intersections on rural roads have visibility screened by tall corn. So whether there's a stop sign or not at a four-way rural intersection, stop. We've seen too many tragedies where accidents have occurred because no visibility to see approaching cars from the right or the left. So, as I've said so many times, if you're going out into the country to enjoy the scenery, take the time to do it, slow down, and be careful. Back with more on the Saturday Morning Show. In the closing minutes, a reminder, we still have another Illinois State Fair underway. It's the Illinois State Fair in DuCoin, and it will end on Labor Day. Quite a few other fairs as well that go through the Labor Day weekend. And then next week, there's a very important fair that gets underway on the Wednesday after Labor Day. So that means next Wednesday, September 6th, the Sandwich Fair at Sandwich, Illinois, will open its gates for another great run. They've been doing it, I can't remember. I know I wrote a foreword for a book that I think was published on their 125th anniversary, but it's longer than that. The Sandwich Fair goes Wednesday through Sunday. Max Armstrong and our band, The Back Pages, will be there on Wednesday at noon, and I'll be there on Thursday at noon. So come see us at the Sandwich Fair. Then the next big farm show next week, a week from Tuesday. That's the Husker Harvest Day show out in Grand Island, Nebraska. So it'll be a busy Labor Day weekend for exhibitors at the Farm Progress Show as they pack up everything and head for Grand Island, Nebraska to participate in that big show. The biggest irrigation show in the world at Grand Island, Nebraska. And then keep in mind, and I'll give you the website, because World Dairy Expo coming up the first weekend of October, but the deadline for entering samples of your forage coming up on the 7th of September, that's Thursday. So go to foragesuperbowl.org for more information. Special thanks to Bob Ferguson for twirling the dials this morning, and to all of you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. I'm Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.